Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the newest edition of the Land O' Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky here on the Believe Podcast Network. Got a really good show coming up for you. But first, Andy, before we do that, I do want to let people know, support for Land O' Lakers is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. I gotta be honest with you, we started talking about Manscaped last week. It's a little nervous, a little blushy the first time I did it. And then I was reminded the Lakers last year taught us how to do this because Manscaped is for the whole deal. Alex Caruso,
Danny Green, JaVale McGee. You know what? That's, I believe, six championship rings between the three of them. If six championship rings can shave their balls and feel the need to shave their balls, frankly, so do you people.
It's not just that. Danny Green was very aggressive about telling you about his ball shaving, and that was Danny Green's style. JaVale McGee took it outside, talked about his indoor hedges and his outdoor hedges, and Alex Caruso reminded you can also groom above the waist. So, sure. Wherever you need to groom, Manscaped is there for you. Manscaped has redesigned their electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code LAKERS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com using the code LAKERS20.
Also want to let people know the NBA college basketball, they are back. NFL playoffs right around the corner. And with all these sports going on, there are a lot of bets to lock in on. So if you're thinking about picking the Lakers to repeat their NBA championship, which looks like a good bet at the moment, or somebody to upset Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, you need to go to betonline.ag. Let me tell you what's a difficult thing to figure out right now, Brian. Trying to examine what do you do with your money with the Rams when you don't know who your quarterback is. Is it Jared Goff with a bad thumb, John Wolford, who will be playing his second NFL game ever, not second NFL playoff game. Cool.
You can put him in your pocket. He's adorable.
Yeah, second NFL game, period. But either way, a lot to bet on. Game spreads, totals, team, player, coaching props. Bet online gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there is always the online casino as well. It never closes again. Do not be inside an actual casino. Go to the online casino. Head to betonline.ag today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, betonline.ag. Sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right. So earlier this week, we had a chance to speak, Andy, to Katie Rossman. She is the features reporter at the New York Times, covers media, social media, celebrity, in the ways in which all these things kind of collide and intersect. She did a fantastic feature on Jeannie Buss who became, and this, I gotta be honest with you, and we talk about this a little bit in the interview. Jeannie Buss became the first female owner to win a title in major team sports. And I gotta be honest with you, Andy, I didn't think of that when it happened. It's something that kind of, it flew under my radar. I think it flew under a lot of people's radars. But it's true. And, she wrote the feature about it. It's a great story.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of really cool details in there. And as we talked about with Katie, she approached this as somebody who really did not know a lot about Jeannie Buss to begin with. She was just really attracted to the idea of her as an owner breaking that glass ceiling. And I think that natural curiosity led her to some really cool insights about Jeannie Buss and just really good piece. And we wanted to talk with her about it and just her impressions of Jeannie and everything she took away from it.
All right. So here is our conversation with Katie Rossman of the New York Times. Katie, thanks so much for joining us. What drew you initially to this story of Jeannie Buss?
Well, thank you guys for having me on. An editor just sent me, I believe, a link to something on Instagram saying, do you know about this woman? And did you realize that she's the first woman to win? Well, actually, I don't even know if she flagged that she had been the first women owner to win a championship. She just said, do you know about this woman? And I started Googling and I really didn't know much about her at all. I am a general features reporter and I report on a lot of different things, including sports sometimes, but I wasn't really familiar with her. And as I started reading, and I think I realized that she was the first woman to win, I felt like it was a milestone that had gone under the radar and that she would be an interesting person to profile. So I reached out to the Lakers PR people, and it was interesting because she wasn't clamoring for the story at all, which is always notable, I'm sure, to all reporters and certainly to me at the New York Times, where people in those situations, I mean, I call people plenty of times and they don't want to hear from me, but in a situation like this, you assume they're going to just say like, yes, when, you know, tell us anything you need. And I really had a little bit of a hard time getting Jeannie, I think interested. And then when I did, she was very, very accessible and really open. And we spoke a lot and that's how it got started.
Did you get a sense of why she wasn't necessarily, clamoring, as you say, for the story?
I don't know. I first reached out right in October, right after the championship. And that's when I started reporting this, when we realized that the new season was going to start so soon, relative to the normal length between two seasons. We decided to hold it for the new season rather than having a story that sort of came right in the middle of, one season and the other. We decided let's do it in December. So it could have been that she was, coming out of the bubble herself, that she was, had a lot of just a lot going on. But as I spoke to her, she really was very, I don't know if it's modest or she really, she could be a difficult interview in ways and in moments, because when I would ask her about her role, she talked about the team. And I think that that's smart and for all sorts of reasons, but she just wasn't all that focused on her role. She spoke a lot about having spent 2 weeks in the bubble herself, that she could not believe that they spent 90 days there, in some cases more than 90 days. I think she, having had her own experience of being there for 2 weeks, was just blown away by the team's ability to keep its focus and stamina in those conditions. So, it could have been for all those reasons.
As a writer, is there an appeal on your end to going in kind of cold with a subject in terms of either discovery or the approach and how you would do this?
Well, you know, this is a self-serving answer, so take it with a grain of salt. As a general assignments reporter, meaning, I mean, I do have things that are kind of on a beat, but for the most part, I pop around all over the place. I think that I can be the best reporter for some stories for that very reason, because there are not things that I take for granted, including that it's interesting that a woman's, you know, owner just won an NBA championship, something that just didn't get focused on by a lot of the beat reporters who had all sorts of narratives to follow through. Kobe Bryant had died, you know, this incredibly, you know, weird truncated season, the role of Black Lives Matter, all of that. It's to denigrate nobody's coverage to say that it was overlooked and missed, but I do think it was overlooked and missed. And when somebody who really knows nothing about anything, you know, looks at a story, they come with fresh eyes, and there's nothing that because I know nothing, there's nothing that I take for granted. There's no question that I don't ask because I assume it's going to be an annoying, stupid question. And frankly, you do ask questions then that annoy the people, where they're just like, who is this schmuck interviewing me who doesn't know the first thing about any of this? But and trust me, it happens in plenty of stories that I do. But you often, you know, you have an ability to focus in on details that maybe readers who are not completely immersed in the subject will also find compelling and important. And that's what I try to bring to the coverage. And sometimes I make stupid mistakes and use language that reveals me to be somebody who's not somebody who, you know, focuses on this every single second.
You asked Jeannie what it was like to see that final touchdown the Lakers score.
Yes. Well, I will. I have been covering another sports story that.
Yes.
And I did. There was a conversation early in my work on this story, which I've written on with a reporting partner for months, and somebody brought up the name of Rivera. It was related to the Washington
Ron
football.
Rivera, the head coach of the Washington football.
Rod Rivera. Wait, how does he fit into all this? And the person I was on the phone was like, he's the coach. I was like, oh, yeah, you know. Another New York Times reporter would be embarrassed right now, but I'm just going to push past this.
That's your story on about Daniel Snyder, which we actually, I know I have a couple questions on, because okay. I think the contrast is instructive, and I want to get to that. But you know, you mentioned a couple things there that I think are really interesting. The first is, like, in LA, you're right. The idea, like, what do you mean you don't know the Lakers and Jeannie Buss and all this? Like, because these people are institutions and they've owned the team since, you know, geez, 40 years now. You know, they've been involved with this team. And you know, Jeannie Buss is sort of an LA institution. But I'm not sure even a lot of people in LA make that connection to her being the first female owner. Should they just think of her as Jeannie Buss? And at the risk of asking my own stupid question, what is the significance, the sort of broader, whether it's the business world, the cultural world, the corporate world, to a woman in sports, a sports owner winning a championship, and that person being a woman?
Well, there's probably a couple answers. The best one comes from Billie Jean King, who I interviewed for this piece. And she said, and I'm paraphrasing, but paraphrasing closely.
I have the exact quote if you need it.
Yeah. Why don't you read it?
To see women in these decisions, making positions is of paramount importance, because we are never going to have a woman president until people understand that women can lead everyone, not just women.
I think that's a big part of it. It's important because it needs to stop being notable, and it won't stop being notable until it happens more and more. Mm-hmm. And with Jeannie Buss, I mean, I think in the NFL, there have been a couple teams that have won the Super Bowl that have been owned by women. And I knew this off the top of my head, but this is just another way that it shows you, you know, how little I know what I'm talking about. But there was a woman who had survived her husband. Maybe it was, I don't even want to say.
Tom Benson's.
Yeah. Gail Benson with the Saints. Gail Benson.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so there have been instances of it, and I haven't reported on the Saints, so I can't speak to her involvement with the team. But in the case of the Lakers, this is not merely an owner who has hired people to run the show. I mean, Jeannie Buss runs the Lakers, and Jeannie Buss has watched the Lakers being run since her father purchased the franchise in 1979. And from what I can tell from my reporting, has pretty much done every job short of dribbling the ball herself. You know, she ran the forum. She understands, you know, the stadium business itself, which obviously stopped mattering as much when they became a tenant of the Staples Center. But still, having that sort of understanding holistically, being involved at it at every level, it seems like, and that makes it even more relevant and important.
What I think is really interesting beyond just, you know, that glass ceiling that we are talking about and that is really significant is also just that it wasn't that long ago with Jeannie that for all of her experience within the organization and in different facets, like you were talking about, and, you know, she had this reputation running the business side that has always been just impeccable. And she's been, I think, very well respected around the league. She's only really had a few years under her belt as the ultimate shot caller within the organization. Mm-hmm. And I think it took some time on her part to get used to that. And there were some growing pains. What sense did you get in talking with her about what that transition was like for her, just whether in terms of the mechanics of it or just acknowledging I'm really the one in charge now, like the significance of that?
Well, you know, I'm speaking based on my reporting. Yeah. And everybody should, you know, take, you know, I can't speak for her, but sure. My sense is based on the reporting is that, well, first of all, she had the issue, I think, of trying to be inclusive of her whole family and her brothers, particularly after the time of her father's death, which I think was in 2013. And from what I gather from her, she didn't understand why her brother was making the decisions that he was making. And
she wasn't alone.
And it sort of didn't make sense to her. And when she realized, and I think she realized she's really willing to credit a lot of other people for helping her understand, whether it's Phil Jackson or Magic Johnson, but when she realized that the strategy was straying from the way her dad did it, that what she needed to do was get back to her dad's strategy. And I said, what was that strategy? And she pointed out, we talked about The Last Dance, and she said, you know, in Chicago, Jerry Krause said, organizations win championships. She said, that is not how we feel at the Lakers. We feel that you get a star player who also has leadership qualities, and you build everything in the organization to help that person do what they're capable of doing. And that isn't, you know, what my brother was doing. I think, you know, she said that when Magic came to advise her before she hired him to be president of basketball operations, he said, you know, the Lakers need to get back to that place where they can get a player like LeBron James, and it's going to be a couple of years before you can, you know, with the salary cap and all sorts of, you know, things that have been in motion before you can get back to that. There's going to need to be building to get back to that place. But that's what your dad did that is not being done now. And I think that's, you know, that was the voice that she listened to. And I said to her, well, what about, you know, why you don't take credit for things? Like, what's your vision for it? And it was confusing to me at first. And then ultimately something that I kind of admired about her is she was unwilling to take any individual credit. I mean, to her, what she has done right was to put the Dr. Buss method back in place. And she said, you know, when Walt Disney died or when Walt Disney stepped away, nobody was like, let's reinvent the wheel. You know, that, you know, like obviously Walt Disney had some good ideas and Walt Disney kind of did.
Like there was a stretch, you know, it's been a little while now, 15, 20 years ago, where Disney did seem to sort of try to reinvent the wheel and they got hammered. Yeah. And they went back to doing it the old way. And, yeah. And it seemed to help.
Yeah. And that's what she was saying. Like, we didn't, you know, nobody needed like Jeannie Buss to come in and be like, I've been waiting for this moment my whole life. Now let me run the team the right way. You know, as she felt like they needed to get back to the way her dad did things.
It's funny you say that because, you know, we've been around Jeannie for a while, you know, covering the team, and we've been there for this entire transition. And one sense that I've always gotten is that all things being equal, Jeannie wasn't necessarily looking to be the ultimate shot caller. Like it's a position that she's had to take on, you know, through necessity of, you know, her father passing and quite frankly, her older brothers not being up for it. But it's always felt like all things being equal, you would keep things the way they were, which, I mean, it's a loaded element of it, but that also means her father still being alive. You know, there's always been that element that it's felt to me like she wasn't necessarily looking to do this just because there's a lot that comes with her doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, like it would be a weird thing to be clamoring for when you think about everything that would have to happen in order for her to be doing it.
Yeah. You know, so I something that I didn't quite get into the piece because it already was very long and there just for all sorts of reasons is I mean her I don't want to use a loaded word like obsession because it's not that, but she was just so she revered her father. I mean, revered him. And I think that her initial involvement, and this I did say in the piece, really came from her wanting to be around her dad. And that it was when she became an older adolescent, sort of later in high school, that she realized, you know, if I get interested in the things he's interested in, then I can be around him more. And when the summer before she went to college, he buys the team and she's like, I want a job, like, give me a job. What do you want me to do? And she just kind of loved being with him and being around him. And she shared with me a note. I'm going to look on my phone from where she texted to me that she found. She was sort of doing cleaning as we all have been doing, you know, organizing, going through things. And she found a note that she and her father were sitting at the, they were at MBA meetings. And I think she said it was 2003 and they were passing notes. They sort of were sitting next to each other, not passing them, but writing notes to each other on the same piece of paper. And she wrote to him, I don't ever want you to retire. What can I do to make your life easier so you continue going strong? And he said, life is beautiful for me right now. I've never been so happy. You and Linda really help. And she shared this with me. And part of the reason I didn't put it in the story, like I said, I had so much material and we had to make some judicious decisions, is I wasn't sure, you know, like, what point was I going to make with the letter that her dad really liked Linda's involvement, you know, which had, I knew had come under fire at certain moments but to me, I just think she just adored her dad, and the opposite, you know, it was the opposite of her waiting to get her turn. You know, I think she would have been happy had her turn never come.
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, she's an unusual, if you know, because there haven't been that many women at her level, I think we develop archetypes of powerful women, because there just aren't enough, there aren't enough examples to say, you know, we should get rid of archetypes because everybody's an individual. And I was very taken with the way that she kind of defied archetypes. You know, I mean, women who really want to be taken seriously as powerful executives tend not to pose naked for Playboy. If they fall in love with the coach of the team, you know, another sort of high level executive, I mean, I guess that happens, but it's not the sort of thing that, you know, a certain archetype of woman wants to define herself. You know, it's complicated for.
So you don't want to be seen as, oh, there's Jeannie Buss, the coach's girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. She's, you know, and the owner's daughter, you know, right. That she had no discomfort with being Jerry Buss's daughter first and Jeannie Buss second. And she just, as long as she was doing what her dad asked her to do and trying to get better and better at it, both, you know, baptism by fire and learning from him. And she just, you know, her life is about the Lakers. And I think when there was a man who she could fall in love with, and it wasn't a distraction, it was an enhancement to her work for the Lakers, I assume that whether that was on a conscious level or not, I'm sure that's part of the reason it worked for so long and didn't work. You know, if you look at when the relationship stopped working, he was working for another team.
We went to the Knicks in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just I don't know if I've gone off on tangents there, but the point is that she very much is comfortable giving her dad credit and pretty much feels their successes because she went back to doing it the way that he taught her to do it. The way he did it that she learned from him. And that's what she felt her brother was not doing and why she felt the need to do what she did.
You talked a little bit about archetypes and things and, you know, and what you would expect from powerful people, not just powerful women who are doing things a certain way. You know, earlier you alluded to the article that you'd written about Daniel Snyder, who is widely considered, you know, one of the three or four worst owners in American team sports. Mm-hmm. Regardless of, you know, whether it's sports ownership, you've written about Leonard Lauder, you've been around a lot of powerful and influential people, very public people. You mentioned some of the ways that Jeannie doesn't fit some of the expectations and the stereotypes that you would have for powerful people. What are some of the qualities that you think she has that do kind of run as a through line for the for the successful people in public life that you've encountered?
Well, she cares about making the people who work for her happy, which it's not something people necessarily like Dan Snyder are known for. She really seems to care, and not in a way where, again, this is my sense, and you know, the weirdness of this year for me is I never met her in person. I mean, in other situations I would have flown to LA and spent some time with her, so this was all over the phone and talking to other people. I did a lot of reporting for the story, but she really cares about people being happy, and I think that it's built into her. I talked to Linda Rambis a lot about this. I think especially in 2020, you know, when we talk about like the whole individual and, you know, how it's important to show respect in a corporate environment for even the things that matter to people outside. But I think with a sport, it especially matters to players. And she was very, she talked a lot about how, you know, how much the Black Lives Matter movement mattered to the team and to her and to the players, and that she felt the sacrifice that they made being separated from that in the bubble, and that she felt in some ways that was she was so moved and awed by their sacrifice in not being able to take part in that in a hands-on way. And to me, that just showed that she cares about them being happy, and it probably makes her a good owner in a lot of ways, because if you care about people being happy, people are going to want to work for you. And particularly, you know, when she first took over, you know, the basketball operations, people weren't like, you know, clamoring necessarily to play for the Lakers as they might have at other times. And so anyway, I think that matters, but she's also doesn't seem to be anybody's pushover. There were times I sense that myself. And, you know, you ask annoying questions sometimes as a reporter, just because you're trying to get them to say anything, especially people who are very media trained, which someone like mm-hmm. Jeannie Buss is going to be like, I didn't, you know, oh, the love of the game. And you're like, oh, okay, great. You know, so you're just trying to get them anyway. That, sure. Yeah. There were definitely moments where she was like, well, I don't understand the question, or what exactly are you trying to ask? And I just wanted to be like, I don't know, I'm just trying to get you to say something. But she's, and you know, listen, she fired her brother. So she's decisive and you
believe
know,
me, what if I could, you know, I know how hard it is. Like that is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And, you know, and she did it when she did it because the trade deadline was coming up and she was worried that he was going to do something to make it harder for her to get back to this, you know, leader player, you know, sort of model for the team. And, you know, I think she's decisive. She's decisive when she needs to be and seems to actually care about making people happy. And I don't think it's in a mercenary sort of way. I don't think it's merely because she knows that's the way to get the best. I mean, I think she does actually care. But so those are a couple of things I'll mention.
One thing that I've actually thought about this before, but your piece reminded me of this. Two elements, and we talked about this before with Jeannie, that have been controversial in the past. One was dating Phil Jackson at the time when he was the coach of the team. The other one was posing for Playboy. And I think if it's a weird thing in that, you know, in 2021 and the way certain things are looked at now, I think both of those things would be looked at differently, but for different reasons. Like Jeannie and Phil dating, for example, and I want to preface this by making it clear, I'm not being critical of this at all. This was a, you know, near 20-year relationship. It was obviously very serious for both of them. But at the time when they started dating, the focus was more on palace intrigue and, you know, the gossip and the drama that just always seems to swirl around the Lakers. And, you know, it also, you know, touched on the relationship between Phil Jackson and Jerry West and Jerry Bust and Jerry West eventually leaving the organization, that sort of stuff. Whereas now I think people would examine it more through the lens of, is it actually proper with power dynamics within an organization, you know, regardless of Jeannie actually being the one that's more powerful within the organization, you're still talking about two very powerful people. And, you know, is that setup tenable, you know, in terms of what we've sort of come to focus on when it comes to appropriateness within workplace relationships? The flip side, though, is the controversy that came with her posing for Playboy, I think would be much different now, in that I don't think Jeannie would get hammered for it the same way now that she might have, you know, I guess it was 25 years ago that she did mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
Obviously there would be people that would object to it because people object to everything, but I think there, I think you would see more people sticking up for her now than you certainly would have then, because my recollection in 1995 was that it was roughly nobody. And I found that interesting.
Well, she and I spoke a lot about this, and, you know, her, you know, I think what she did 25 years ago would now be seen as a very, you know, body positive, you know, woman being in control of her own body and her own decision sort of thing. And if men can sort of, objectify women's bodies. Why can't women do it themselves? I think that that's absolutely true. And, you know, I think that's 100% true. I also think that what you're saying about the sort of office dynamics of the relationship with her and Phil then versus now, I think what you say is 100% true if she were Jeannie Buss now running the show, essentially Phil Jackson's boss. I think in some ways, because her father was so omnipotent, you know, it was that in a way, I think there's also the question of, you know, should a woman executive be judged for what she does? Well, I guess it's more complicated than that, because she was an executive on the team.
She was an executive, but Phil Jackson was ultimately, I think, considered perhaps more influential or important. I mean, like, you know,
100%. And I think her father would have gotten rid of her. Yeah. And I think, you know, if she herself said that her father said, you know, I love my children, but the Lakers is my baby, protect the baby, which, you know, he told her. I think that if you follow that through, I think push comes to shove and someone needs to be on, you know, if Phil Jackson was performing and somehow she wasn't, I think the Lakers being the baby would have, I don't think that he would have been making decisions to protect his daughter at the expense of a coach who was winning for them.
Oh, sure. But just as more of like an overarching talking point, I think it would have been looked at differently, because we're starting to move in a different place again. And I said it before, I don't say this to infer that it's, you know, that it's inappropriate or anything like that. I just think it's different, because back then nobody talked about it. Like it's similar to the way we've learned to talk about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky differently. Like very before differently. There was a focus just on pure sex and, you know, where whatever happened did happen in the White House, blah, blah, blah. And over time we've come to realize, like, no, there was a power dynamic in play that makes it inappropriate. And it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I think it speaks to a difference in where we are. Whereas, again, I think with the Playboy issue, there would be less of, for lack of a better way of putting it, slut shaming when it came to Jeannie Buss. And
for sure. You know,
the idea that there a woman is putting herself out there naked, that is wrong. It is inappropriate. Why should an executive do that? I'm not saying there'd be no eyebrows raised now, because it would be still an unusual thing for her to do. But I do think the reaction would be different, and in a good way.
I agree.
This is not an easy question to answer. It's almost an unfair question to ask, because it involves probably a lot of broad characterizations. Again, sort of looking at that sort of comparison, because it really jumped out to me, the two stories, you know, sort of recently that you've written about owners are Jeannie Buss and Daniel Snyder. What do you feel? I think it'd be hard to say, based on what you were saying before, that something like Daniel Snyder, that things that have gone on within the Redskins, the Washington Football Team organization, formerly the Redskins, would happen under Jeannie. Because I don't think, you know, she just wouldn't allow that those sorts of things to happen.
Well,
but broadly speaking, though, would those types of things be less likely to happen? That those types of organizational failures, could they be less likely to happen? Were there more women in positions of influence, or is that an unfair or unrealistic expectation of women in powerful positions?
So I've been reporting on Dan Snyder with my colleague Ken Belson, who is the NFL beat reporter. Mm-hmm. So we are a good combination of, you know, in the weeds and pulled back on that. And we've written a lot of stories, and I can't say enough about him. He's just an incredible reporter and colleague. But you know, I think that here's what I'll say. Another difference between Jeannie, from what I can gather, and Dan Snyder, from what I can gather, is Jeannie is a very involved owner. I mean, she is not absentee. She's the opposite. She's not hiring somebody to run the franchise. She runs the franchise. Dan Snyder, at least, has said that all of these things happen and he had no idea. And he's just, you know, the guy who signs the checks and the guy who takes in the checks, and, you know, all of this stuff happened under the watch of people he had hired. You know, I think that if you take him at his word, he's not very good at hiring people then. You know, I think that, you know, we could have a bigger discussion about that. But so from that standpoint, there's the dichotomy of being an absentee owner, which I'm not sure I completely buy necessarily.
He's supposedly very involved with a lot of the football stuff, at the very least. You know, he's notorious for meddling in those things.
Yeah, it's just hard to imagine, you know, and it's really the Washington Post that has broken the stories about the, you know, the instances of just the institutionalized harassment that went on. It's hard to imagine, you know, knowing none of that. It's also hard to imagine that going on under a woman. I mean, I don't want to say that it never would or never has or never could or never will, but there's a certain amount of common sense that, you know, women tend not to, you know, like grab at cheerleaders. I don't know. I mean, they don't. I'm gonna like say it and stick by it. So there was a boys club at the Washington football team. I mean, the executives in charge were primarily men, and they treated the female executives and female employees and the cheerleaders, you know, like objects in all sorts of ways. And I just think women, you know, part of what happens when access to power is limited, you, and as it is for women, and it still is, but when you come up the ranks, you can't get away with a lot of mishigas. So you are less likely to sort of behave badly because you're just trying to keep your head down and get the work done. I think that is the case for a lot of women in all sorts of professions. And so I'm not trying to say that women, you know, are more moral. You know, it's just women can't get away with the BS, and these are generalizations. Sure, and I guess I'm thinking about my own career too, but like you really need to focus on doing the best possible job you can, because you don't get a lot of get out of jail free cards, and you don't get a lot of opportunities to show what you're capable of. So you're often less likely to take those for granted.
That is a real, by the way, scathing indictment of our society when you're saying that sexism is actually preventing sexism by women. Like sexism is not even, misogyny is not even really an equal opportunity thing. Like that's, well, because I don't think you're wrong actually, but I'd never really thought of it that way. And again, that is pretty scathing.
Yeah. Now, if given the opportunity, I'm sure we'd harass with impunity, but unfortunately we're not given the keys to the kingdom. That's a joke, by the way, but
no, but I understand what you're saying. It's a biting joke. Like,
yeah,
it's, because it's both fortunate and unfortunate at the same time, but again, it is really scathing when you unpeel back the layers of that onion.
Mm-hmm. Well, the article is fantastic. We'll make sure to tweet it out and post it and all that stuff. It's the Lady of the Lakers. Katie Rossman is the writer from the New York Times who put it together. It really is, as somebody who, as Andy said, had been around Jeannie Buss for a long time, been around this team for a long time, there was so much in it that I found instructive and new and fresh to read. So I know Lakers fans, if you haven't seen it, will definitely want to. We appreciate all the extra insight. This was fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm flattered that you write a story and you want it to be interesting to people who know nothing about it, and you don't want to look unsophisticated to the people who know everything. So I really am flattered by that. Thank you.
All right. So our thanks again to Katie Rossman of the New York Times. And we'll get that article out on our Twitter feed at Cam Brothers. It's really worth your time. Lady of the Lakers, if you just want to Google it and check that out. Before we go on, I do want to take a second and shout out Houston Rockets big man DeMarcus Cousins. Andy, did you know that he has his own comedy show?
Yeah, we had a chance to watch it over the holidays. Very funny. Steph Curry, a lot of other NBA players in the crowd getting roasted, which is always fun to watch. Mike Epps was the host. He's a funny guy. Features some other comedians, including Gary Owen and Carlos Miller. Streaming right now on Amazon Prime, also available for free on Tubi TV, T-U-B-I TV. So go check it out, people. DeMarcus Cousins. He's a funny guy in the locker room.
Also, a reminder too, Delicious Pizza, 20% off at both locations. If you use the code word Cam Brothers, that's good for the West Adams location. It's good for the Hollywood location off Sunset. Go get yourself some really, really excellent pizza and at a small business run by a huge Lakers fan. Again, Delicious Pizza, two locations, West Adams and Sunset, 20% off when you tell them the Cam Brothers sent you. We've done this actually a little bit with Rob Pelinka, Andy, talking kind of just the contrast between where Jeannie is now versus where she and ownership and the organization and everything management was, a few years ago. It's a pretty startling contrast. I was always sympathetic to Jeannie for when people would pile on about, why don't you just get rid of Jim? Her father left her very specific instructions. And as Katie talked about, she was deeply devoted to her father. And to undo that right away, just because it was, relatively clear that Jim wasn't up for the job. I was always sympathetic to at least that part of her dilemma, so to speak, in terms of how to turn the team around during the times when it was really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that during that period, there was a lot of time spent by Jeannie where she would, I think, very passive aggressively undercut Jim, because there would be a lot of times where she would speak about the opportunities that she had afforded Jim. And, I'm willing to spend whatever, all the resources are there for him and Mitch. And, we'll see what happens. I mean, it was very clear in the way she spoke.
She was a lot better at the PR game than he was, and knew she was better, and knew where the sympathies of the city were. Right.
She recognized that the two of them were being pitted against each other. She recognized correctly that she was a hell of a lot more popular around the city than Jim was. And Jim's presence was, in certain ways for a while, I think, convenient for Jeannie. But then there came a point where she had to do a very, very difficult thing, regardless of their actual relationship, in firing Jim. And it's interesting, in when she hired Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson, two people who were completely inexperienced at the job at the time, where she had a very inexperienced coach in Luke Walton, and she was inexperienced in her own role. I didn't think the decision was a good idea then in terms of the two of them being together. I remember saying at the time, if I had had to pick between one or the other, I would have picked Rob Pelinka, just because I think he had more relative comparable experience to that position than Magic did. But we learned recently that she went to those two in particular because they would be off the radar of anybody, including Jim and Johnny Buss, Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak, who would be aware that their jobs were about to get lost. you know, she needed to try to keep it secret. And those were two guys that she could go to without it leaking out. So you started to understand a little more of the rationale. It's interesting a lot with Jeannie. I mean, things are obviously going great. And when things are going great, you deserve a certain amount of credit. You deserve the spoils. There are things that broke very well for her that don't necessarily have to do with her. You know, I mean, getting Anthony Davis is something that doesn't necessarily have to do directly with Jeannie's stewardship of this team, but she rightly gets to enjoy that. And I think, you know, the idea of whether, you know, whether she's been right all along that having Kurt and Linda Rambis in the positions they're in, or whether she was right all along, that I was just about to say, I don't know if she's been proven right or wrong, but I don't know if it matters because the team is in a good place. And I'm fully confident in Jeannie, by the way, she's going to be able to maintain it.
I think that's important. The part, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but like, I think the part that does matter, it doesn't matter if having Linda around is helpful for her on a personal level. You know, it's another thing that Katie talks about in that feature. It's like she has a deep trust and friendship with Linda Rambis. And it's important to have people around you that you can trust, that you can lean on. And, you know, she doesn't have to do things in exactly the same way as every other ownership group, whatever it is. As long as those people are responsible for the right things. If Linda Rambis is in charge of, you know, basketball related stuff, you've got a problem. And I think the one thing that she has been vindicated on that is critically important is that Rob Pelinka is a pretty good GM and capable of running the basketball department and has evolved, I think, as Jeannie has learned on the job, gotten better at it with time.
Yes.
Which is fine and allowable. The question that you kind of brought up before about whether she was right all along, and I don't mean this to you specifically, but it's something that it's one of those very like modern sort of hot takey, I don't know what the right word is, social media, like you're either all right or you're all wrong. Like, and like the idea that Jeannie wasn't great at being the shot caller at the beginning of it and got better, that Rob Pelinka wasn't great at being the GM at the beginning of it, learned and got better, somehow, if you're a staunch defender of those people, becomes problematic. I've never quite understood that. And it's like, she's gotten better at it and Rob Pelinka's gotten better at it, but that's the hire that she made that's still here that matters most. And he, you know, whatever caveats you want to put on it, this, that, whatever, the team is in a great place. It is being competently run.
Yes.
And whether, you know, that's the part that matters.
Yeah. And like I said, I have complete confidence in Jeannie that this team being in a strong position, she is very, very well equipped to help keep it there. And, you know, I mean, look, Dr. Buss, who I will maintain is the greatest owner in the history of professional sports, he lucked out in terms of his starting place. Starting with Kareem and Magic, that's a really, really fortunate place.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, Dr. Buss started in this great place and then was great enough as an owner to be able to maintain it. You know, it doesn't take away from anything with Jeannie. If you want to say that she's better equipped now because of where they're at, okay, so would any owner. But I wouldn't necessarily trust all owners to be able to maintain good fortune. I would trust her.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is really cool about this is the success of the Lakers is deeply personal.
Yes.
To her, to the family. So like these, I mean, we sometimes the keep it in the family thing can be problematic. I think, you know, they leaned on that a little too hard. I think they did get too insular and some of that stuff, but they see this as a family business. You want ownership of your teams to understand the relationship that teams have with the city and that ultimately the team belongs to the city and the fans as much as it does the people who like literally own the team. And the Buss family gets that. And Jeannie Buss gets that and they respect it. And they take that seriously. And so, you know, with the Lakers being good for not just for herself, but for the city, I think does genuinely mean something for her. And to see that pay off is cool.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Brian, because there are times where I think just how personal all of this is to Jeannie has been to her detriment as an owner. But in this particular case, when you're talking about, okay, it's great right now, and just the personal stake she has in maintaining it, like how much it means to her from an emotional place, that's a great thing. And that's where we're at right now.
The other part that, you know, we didn't get a chance. I actually forgot to ask this question. I really wanted to. I wonder what, you know, that contrast between Jeannie Buss, you know, how the Lakers are run and Dan Snyder and how the Washington football team is run. I'm looking forward to a day. My question was sort of what will be required to make it so there's a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth team owner, female team owner, woman team owner, who wins championships. And the short answer is just more rich women who want to buy teams. I would love to see that. Just, yeah. You know, I think the place that we're getting in sports now, where the understanding that maleness is not really a qualification to be good at running a team, is ultimately excellent for fans. Because what you really want is a competent human being at the front of, you know, of your organization. If you're going to spend all that money on tickets or spend all that time and emotional investment, you want somebody good running it. And if you sort of, if the pool is limited naturally by half, you're cutting yourself off. And so it's a good sign. And I hope more people are able to follow her through that door. Need more rich people, more rich women.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason that you can't have more people like Jeannie Buss in her position. Absolutely.
All right. So thanks again to the folks at Manscaped. Thanks again, Lakers 20 for 20% off at Manscaped. It's like telling them that we sent you, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, please do.
Others sent me here to shave my balls.
Absolutely. We want to be associated with that act. Please.
Help
very
us.
Much. Too. Be thinking of us the entire time you're doing it. Nothing would make us happier.
BetOnline.ag and 20% off at Delicious Pizza when you tell them the Cam Brothers sent you. Two locations, West Adams and in Hollywood. We will see everybody next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.